Good evening, gentlemen. We continue in the Rambam, Hilchos Yontov, Perek Zayin, Halacha Chaf Hei, Chapter 7, Law 25. We talked about in Halacha Chaf Dalet that anything you're not allowed to do on Chol HaMoed, you're not allowed to tell a non-Jew to do on Chol HaMoed. And that was an important principle. So I guess you can't tell a non-Jew to do anything. So now, we're going to see there's different types of work that one can generally employ a non-Jew with, and the question is, does it make any difference? So he says like this in Chafei, Seichrin hasochir al malacha b'moed la'soso lachar moed. First of all, you can hire a worker, on Chol HaMoed, you can hire a worker to do work for you after Chol HaMoed. You say explicitly, I'm hiring you today, but not to work today, but to work after Chol HaMoed. Right. That's okay, because that really isn't doing any work on Chol HaMoed. You want to chop around the worker, because you're going to need to get work done right after Chol HaMoed. If you don't chop him now, you might not get workers after Chol HaMoed.
Can you pay him a deposit or pay him?
Well, it says, Uvavad shol yishkov l'shol yimbov lo yimona keder shos v'chol. But you shouldn't have the guy like weigh and measure and do all kinds of things like you normally do on Chol HaMoed. In other words, you don't want to, count the work you have to do, because that's already kind of a working type of preparation for that. Right. I don't know if pay would necessarily be a problem with a deposit, because I don't, what would be the malacha there? There's no malacha. Just securing him's ability to do it later.
Right. More about an estimate.
It's more the estimate, where the guy's, taking the ruler and going this way, and the tape measure, this and that.
That you can't do. It says clearly.
That's already a whole thing. But he said, listen, I want you to come by.
So, for example, if you've done all that estimating stuff before Chol HaMoed, and then you just say, okay, we'll do it.
Seal the deal.
Right.
That's fine. Now we come to a halacha that's very relevant. Nochri shekibel kiboles miyisrael. A non-Jew, he gets a job, and it was called kablonus. Kablonus is you give him a specific job, you're paying him for the job, and not paying him by the day or the hour. Not per diem, but per job.
So like he builds your house.
That's right. Let's say you hired a guy to build your house.
Mows your lawn.
Afilu hoya chutz latchum. Even if the guy is outside of the tchum. Outside the tchum Shabbos, that means more than 2,000 amos away. Still, eino manicho lasos b'moed. You can't allow him to do that work on Chol HaMoed. Why?
I don't understand that clause about either.
Okay, I'll tell you why.
Nobody walks by.
Because normally, let's say on a Shabbos, for example, if it was outside the chum, Jews wouldn't see what the goy is doing for you.
It's out there. It's like right? A Mary Garber's place.
And therefore, let's say the cobbler. I was only talking about a cobbler, a guy who gave a job for. You gave him a job to do, and you said, listen, I'm giving you a job, you can do it when you want to do the job. And the guy wants to do it on Shabbos. So if it's outside of the tchum, there's no Jews going to see what he's doing. So it's not a problem. And he's doing, remember, there's a kablan, you're paying him to do the job. You're not telling him to do it on Shabbos, you're not telling him to do it on Chol HaMoed, whatever the scenario is. When he's doing it, it's when he wants to do it. So he's doing it on Shabbos, because he wants to do it on Shabbos. You don't want to do it on Shabbos.
Right.
He's doing on Chol HaMoed because he wants to do on Chol HaMoed. So then when you make the guy a kablan, say you gave him to build on your house, right? So it was way before Chol HaMoed. And the job's going into Chol HaMoed. Well, listen, I'm sure he takes vacations, and he could have taken a vacation anytime he wanted to. Why does he want to work on Chol HaMoed? So the guy's working for himself, right? As opposed to, we'll see in a minute, if you hire him as a day worker, you can't say he's working for himself. He's working for you. He's working for you, right? He's working for you as your instruction, what you want him to do on that day. But if he's a kablan, where you just give him a job, I want you to build me whatever. Build me a table. Why you build me a table? And I'll pay you. When I get the table, I'll pay you. So if he's working on Shabbos, I didn't ask him to work on Shabbos. I asked him to build me a table. So the problem is, even if it's a kiboles, right, where the guy took on the job, and the specific case that Rambam is referring to is a house. So even if, and we'll see in a minute when we look in the halacha where the differences lie. So even if it's outside the tchum, ain't a manichlas, you can't let him do it. Because Jews could now walk into that area, beyond the tchum on Chol HaMoed, and they'll see that the guy's building his house.
Why would your house be outside the tchum?
Because you are a wealthy suburbanite. It's your summer cottage.
Summer cottage.
Oh, I see.
I don't know.
All right,
cottage.
Okay, all right. Right. That's the part that I was confused
about. Shakol Yodin, because everyone's going to know, Shemalachos Vishal Yisrael, they're going to know that the Jews work, Yach Shadua, so they'll suspect him that he did it the wrong way. Shusachar Esanachri Lashal B'moid. He hired him per diem to work on Chol
HaMoed. Why do we always think like that?
And well, it's never a problem for Jews to think bad about others.
Don Lakavskus, what happened to that?
Halavai.
Can't rely on
it. Shein HaKol Yodim, because nobody knows. HaHefesh Yesh Ben HaSach Ben HaKabim, because they're ignorant. That's why, Martin.
Oh, okay.
They start off by being ignorant, and then they don't judge favorably.
Oh, boy.
They don't know the difference between a Socher and a Kabim. They don't know the difference between a hired worker who's doing it on the behest of the Jew, and a Kablan who's doing it on his own when he wants to do it. Uleviga Chasa, therefore we don't allow you to even, it's a permitted way. You really did do it in a permitted way. He is a Kablan, he did it for the job. But people will not see it that way, and since people will not see it that way, they see it in the bad way.
It's interesting, in Winnipeg, they have the new tourist center. It's 18,000 square feet that was just built.
We're going to get to that. They're working on it now.
There's a big sign, this construction site is closed on all Jewish holidays. They list, because the Goyim don't know when the Jewish holidays are, so they have specific dates. This date, Rosh Hashanah, you know, Purim.
For the next 10 years.
No, it's finished. They finished it on October 15th.
Chol HaMoed or just the holidays?
No, just the
Chol HaMoed. Well, we'll see.
They're very Rambamish.
Let's take a look. We'll see. Now we'll go through now some halachos about this. So number one. So again, we said you can't do work through a non-Jew, and it's prohibited even if you're delaying it for after the end will cost more.
And 4 months ahead of schedule, which was amazing.
It's a moifus.
Yes, it's truly a moifus. To raise the money for that place, 17,000 square feet in Winnipeg, was a moifus also.
Anyway, even if it's going to cost more to do it after Chol HaMoed, you still have to delay it for after Chol HaMoed. Now, the exception to this rule is a case where the malacha is needed on Chol HaMoed in order to do a mitzvah on Chol HaMoed.
Okay.
Then you can hire a non-Jew to do it, even if it's skilled work. For example, here it is. Non-Jewish worker can be hired to make skilled repairs on a shul in order to make it useful. The plumbing broke.
Right.
So it's a mitzvah. Sarche Rabim and all these things. So now, even though it's going to be a professional job, it's a goy. Goy can do that for you.
Can't use the washer.
Now, here's the case. Now, we've said most times you're not allowed to have the work done for you on Chol HaMoed, even if the non-Jew was hired before the Yontif and wasn't specifically instructed to work on Chol HaMoed. But sometimes it's permitted. And it depends a lot on the way the guy was hired. And we've already explained the two ideas of Kaplonus and Schir Yom. So, a non-Jew is hired in a manner that's considered to be kablonus, to do the job. So it's like he's working on his behalf, and he's paying for the job and not for the specific labor involved. So therefore, malacha is permitted on Chol HaMoed as long as the non-Jew is not specifically instructed to do the malacha at that time. Okay? You can. However, this is the big however. This only applies with work that's done to metaltalin, movable objects. We'll see, we'll give you examples shortly. But anything that's a movable object, and you give it to the goy to do, and you didn't tell him specifically to do it on Chol HaMoed, you hire him before Chol HaMoed, and now the goy wants to do the work on Chol HaMoed, then that's okay.
So your lawnmower,
hold
car.
Hold on. Okay, however, work done on things that are called mechubar lekarka, real property, something that is attached to the ground.
Like your house.
Like grass.
Grass.
Okay. That is prohibited, as we will shortly explain.
It's a car attached to the ground.
Just wait, we're going to get to everything here. Now, on the other hand, if the guy is a schir yom, a per diem worker, right, so that is not allowed, because it's like he is mamish working for the Jew at that time. And it doesn't matter if it's real property or movable objects, that for sure you cannot have them work for you on Chol HaMoed. Now, let's get to some good examples. Okay, so let's say you're having a house built by a non-Jewish builder who's using non-Jewish workers. You cannot allow the work to continue on Chol HaMoed.
Wow.
You've got to stop the work.
Or shop
even
field.
If it's, yeah, well, wow. Of course that. Even if it's going to result in additional costs. Even if it's done under a job contracting agreement, and even if the builder was not instructed to work on Chol HaMoed, can't do it. And as we said, the problem is because of Maris Ein, it looks like you've done something wrong because people will suspect the worst.
That's pretty.
Okay? And even if this construction site's beyond the Tchum,
right,
doesn't matter because people can travel that way. Now, that's...
So if it's beyond the Tchum, can you have them work on Yom Tov and Shabbos where they can't travel that way?
No.
They're not supposed to be working at all for you.
Right, but I mean, we bring that as a distinction.
Now, if the, listen, you're not going to know. If they're going to come on their own...
Let's say somebody takes a holiday and they come up there. Let's say you're doing it at a cottage way out in the nowhere and somebody comes...
No, but I'm just wondering why the Rambam makes that specific
point. We're talking
point.
About Chol HaMoed.
Right. So as distinguished from Yom Tov and Shabbos when you...
It's different halachas, different halachas. Right. Just stick with Chol HaMoed now. But certainly they shouldn't be working for you.
There's a much higher chance of getting beyond the
right. Now, there is an opinion that permits construction work on Chol HaMoed under a job contracting agreement if that's the customary way in the city to do this kind of work. Right? But even after that, he said, you really shouldn't conduct yourself that way unless you have shyness, this and that. So really, it's better not to do the work.
Right.
Now, some poskim allow the construction of a community building on Chol HaMoed under a job contracting agreement, since an entire group of Jews will not be suspected of doing wrongdoing. I wonder. Okay.
Maybe that was old as his book.
But that's some poskim. But most poskim say they still don't allow it.
Right.
Because even because they maintain that even the conduct of a community might be suspect, not only that of an individual. So therefore, even the shul in Winnipeg should not have been worked on in Chol HaMoed.
It wasn't.
Okay.
Pretty strict.
So now, that's pretty clear. So all these property things, you shouldn't be working on Chol HaMoed.
So if your house contractor, say it costs you $10,000 a day in delay construction because you said don't work for
okay,
me.
So then you'd
are
have
you
to, then it's a shiloh. Then it's a shiloh.
Then you ask a rabbi.
Then that's a good shiloh. We'd have to look. We'd have to go rabbi. Through the situation.
Especially if you made a case that
you contracted in June and the house took forever and, you know, it's not going to be ready to whatever.
And then, okay, then it could be a big duffer ha'avud. Then
the contractor says, I can't go anywhere else. I got my everything tied up at your house, and I got to pay my guys for a week.
Can you ask him to try and do some...
Of course, the fact that he didn't get it done on time is not his fault at all. That's great to be a builder.
Maybe it takes 9 months to build
it. Great to be a builder. There's nothing to hold you. Okay. Nothing. You can do whatever you want, and it's like this unwritten law. You can't. The builders don't have to be responsible.
Teflon. Would it help for them to do inside work so people couldn't see them?
Doesn't matter. No. You see, the truck is outside. The truck's outside. All these things, right? Now, if in a halachically prohibited circumstance, one allowed a non-Jewish builder to work under a contracting agreement, so he could still live in the house after it's finished.
I thought you were going to say you have to take it.
However, according to many poskim, if a non-Jew is hired on a daily basis as a shliyom, the owner can never live in that house.
Oh my!
Yes. We don't hire people as shliyom.
No.
Don't have to worry about it. Other people can move in after waiting the amount of time it would have taken to do the work.
After it's
finished, can move in. Now, it's proper ever even for others to be stringent and not to live in it at any future time. Who wants to live in a house that was built on Chol HaMoed? Like, can you imagine all the negative spiritual energies in that house?
But
the rich guy could sell it to somebody else and take the money. So, the Kitzur Maisa, I'm sure almost everybody makes a contracting agreement. I mean, who doesn't make a deal with a contractor, right? So really would be permitted according to the letter of the law. But according to the Maris Ein of the law, even though everybody, who doesn't use a contracting agreement? Right? So there would be room to be lenient, you know, and so therefore if let's say they're behind and it's going to be major expenses now, you know, like serious expenses and a whole week, you know, or, you know, let's say especially Chol HaMoed because, you know, they want to get certain work in before the winter sets in.
Oh, it took us, yeah.
Right? So, you know, so that's, I've been dealing with some people who are doing house, they're asking me shallows all the time.
Yeah.
So sometimes I said no, sometimes I said yes. It depended on
what mood the rabbi was in.
No,
I gotta edit that from the tape.
You wonder how people could, not judge favorably.
I can't believe that.
So, in the beginning of the building, you know, you're more strict, but as it's coming later and you're seeing the real delays are happening, and there's serious expenses here, like serious losses over here, then there's room to, so you do have a room to be lenient, right?
Clearly.
But lachachili, you don't want to do that. Now, here's another example, and this is very applicable, well, depending on how early or late in the season. Gardening is definitely mechubar lekarka. That's real property. And that's subject to the same laws as construction work. Seems though you're not hiring him per diem, and you're contracting him, but again, it's certainly in the tchum. You're going to hire the tchum. It doesn't matter. All you're going to see is so your gardener cannot work on your house.
Yeah, he can't cut the grass.
He can't cut the grass.
Can't cut the grass during Chol HaMoed or Yom Tovur or Shabbos or anything.
That's right.
Period.
It's only 1 week, and if he comes and you see me...
Well, it's 2 weeks. It's Pesach, the week of Pesach, if it's late, and it's the week of Sukkot.
I don't know if the gardeners start that early in April.
Well, for spring cleaning.
But other things, they want to do it to aerate your thing and other things like that. They can't do anything.
And then in Sukkot is a very common time for people.
So anyway, so that
I wonder whether they would hear, back to the building contract as well, could you put that in the contract initially, that if it goes into October, there'll be a week.
But it's Mechubar, it's a different thing.
You have to tell him he's not a lot. You put every year, put the dates. No Saturdays, right? You put on the whole week of Pesach, 2 days of Shavuos, or Shana Yom Kippur.
What I'm suggesting is that if you put that in the contract at the beginning.
But they're not going to read it.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them,
but
then
they can't
read.
You know, charge
it, but they'll charge the whole amount anyway.
No, they'll charge the whole amount, and then they'll come on Yom Kippur.
Well, they're going to come.
Because the guy who's selling you, he's not the guy going.
But my point is, if some indigent.
No, we have the guy. We have our guy. His name is Abraham, but he's a Ethiopian guy, but he's not Jewish.
I'm just saying, it's not going to help. You're going to write it down. You're going to say he can't come, and the guy who sold you this contract, he ain't the guy cleaning. And some,
But can you send them away and not have to pay them because it was in the contract?
You're paying them for the year.
Yeah.
You're paying for the season. You're paying for the season.
But I thought the worry is you have to pay them every day that they can't work.
No, you're mixing up two things now. The gardener is one.
The gardener.
You're the gardener. You're the gardener.
We're talking about hiring the gardener.
The builder without telling us, Paul.
Paul, you can't just shift in the middle of our discussion without telling us.
Okay, well, I've gone back to the house now. And you put in the contract for the house building that these are the dates you can't work.
So he'll say, fine, I'm not going to work. And then when it gets delayed, he says, but it's being charged because of the delays. And now, you know, once you pass a certain date, he says, okay, I'm charging this price until, let's say, October 2010. He says, once I'm going past October 2010, they put a nice little clause in there, I'm going to charge you X amount per month after that time.
Happens?
So if that's what they don't mind. You want to wait, no problem. When we go past October, and I start knocking you 10, 20 grand a month from you having to come out there. So you got to really, you know, and if you're going to really write a really good contract, the contractor is going to be too smart because I don't want your business.
Because buying a resale does have its advantages.
I'm just saying it's a very hard thing. They got you under.
What if you sold the property to a non-Jew, had them build the house, and bought it back? He's your friend, and then you bought it back for a dollar.
You could do that.
Do with businesses.
Yeah,
right?
Well, you know, that wouldn't be a bad idea. But the only problem is like this. Here's the problem. You know what the problem is?
You're paying the bills.
No, everybody's saying it's Glowinski's house.
Right.
In other words, you know, you're putting a for sale sign in your house and say, where are you moving? Oh, I'm moving to that house on Arnold, you know, over there. Oh, the one that they're building. Yeah, the one that they're building. But it's not mine because it's a goy. It's not going to wash.
But it washes what we do with businesses.
But it looks like Mara
Stein. But this is still Mara Stein. The problem is Mara Stein. It doesn't matter what deals you do in the back.
Here's the thing.
Boardrooms.
Everyone will know that it's Glowinski's house. Very few people are going to know that Glowinski sold it to a non-Jew. And I'm saying technically you're right if you could keep a good secret. If you could keep a good secret and nobody knew you were building that house, like Bechlal, nobody knew. Right? And
which
okay,
is not
they see
common.
Somebody, and in Thornhill, everybody knows who's building which house.
If you're moving to another city or something like that.
Yeah, I'm just saying, that's why, you're right, technically you're very correct. You know, but then again, who is paying the bills? You sold the property to the non-Jew. Now, who is this? You'd have to give him lots of money also, and I wouldn't trust anybody with all that kind of money, right?
A lot of money.
So, technically, you're saying a possibility, but I don't know if in practice you can implement it. That's the only thing.
So, metaltal now.
Okay, last thing now. What about work performed by a non-Jew on movable object? We're much more lenient, and it is, kablonus is permitted. So therefore, before Yontif, you can bring garments to a dry cleaning store owned and operated by a non-Jew. And even though they're going to clean it on Chol HaMoed, as long as you don't specifically say it, and you're going to pick it up after Chol HaMoed.
Okay. Even if they clean it on Yontif?
You're not telling them to clean it.
Right, that's what
you're bringing
saying.
It in 2 days before.
Right, we had that
you can't bring it in Shabbos. The afternoon air of Yontif.
You bring it 2 days before Yontif.
Well, if you do that with Shabbos, you certainly can do it.
And you don't tell them when to have it ready.
Yeah.
So that's not a problem.
Usually they
at all.
Say, is Wednesday okay? And you could say yes, but Wednesday's whole month. So.
That's okay, but I don't need it for them.
Yeah.
Okay. And then no one's going to suspect, who's going to be looking at your clothes to think that your clothes are being dry cleaned?
Right.
Can you imagine that you just go, there's Shelly's suit right there. And clear as
his white shirt.
I see you walking into the dry cleaner.
The same idea, you can give objects in need of repair to a craftsman. Right. Oh, that's the other halacha. Forget it. But now let's talk about other things. What about taking your car in before?
Why is that any different?
It isn't.
It is
okay.
Let's say
you take it before Shabbos too. You can take it that day before.
But
you have to give them time to do it though.
Yeah.
So
like you say, I'll pick it up Monday evening.
These movable objects.
But you take your car into Leo, but then he has to call you and say, "Do you want me to do the brakes? I just realized that you need new brakes."
That's
can
the
you
problem.
Say yes?
You could say yes, Leo, and I don't need it. I'm not picking up the car till 2 days after Sukkot. You go to Leo and say like
whatever
this.
You bring it in
2 days before. You say, Leo, whatever you need to get done. I'm picking it up 2 days after the holidays.
Right. Don't call
now,
me.
If he would call you, you could say, okay, you know, you should do it. And then again, I'm not telling you to do it now, Leo. I'm coming 2 days after the holidays, Leo.
Right.
So you need a Leo. Whatever you say, Leo, just do it.
That's right. Okay. So that's the Kablanos. And now we're going to continue. We've got a little time to start. Just a couple new halachas. Perek Shmini, the last perek of Hilchos Yontif, and again we're continuing with laws of Chol HaMoed, which are going back to what was discussed in the beginning of the seventh perek. If you recall, in the second halacha, in the seventh perek, we talked about malachas you could do when there's a hefsid merubah, and we talked about irrigating your fields. And we said you can irrigate fields that are in desperate need of water, but you can't do it in a way that's what? Excessively burdensome to you, that you need to have a pail and keep picking up the pail and doing the whole field like that. That you couldn't do. So we're going to continue with more of these discussions for the next number of halachas. Aleph. Naharos hamoshchim min ha'agamim. Okay, and this, again, you have to be a bit of a farmer and an irrigator to really understand these cases very clearly. But you got these streams that are flowing from a pond. So now, I guess, you know, the pond is providing water for the streams. And now from that stream, you're able to irrigate very easily the fields that's around the stream. So, mutar lahashkus mein beis hashlochim amoid. You can irrigate the parched out land on a moed, because the water, I guess, is flowing so much out of the pond into the streams, then the water, it's very easy for the water, for you just to get it onto the ground there, it's probably not a lot of work. However, v'hu shelo pasaku, but that's if the water from the pond hasn't stopped going into the streams, and then there's no concern that you make, because if it would stop going to the streams, what would happen? You take a bucket to the pond and start taking the bucket and irrigating
that's
the rest
too much
of the
of
field,
an
and that would be too much work. And a similar idea, v'chena brechos, shamas amayim overes, benem, and pools in which irrigation ditches are passing through them. Again, mutar lahashkusen, you're allowed to irrigate the fields from the pools because there's a consistent flow of liquid that's coming into that area. But if you have a pool where there is not a irrigation ditch flowing in and dumping water into the pool, then you're not allowed to irrigate the fields because once you're going to run out of water, the guy is going to come and use a pitcher, a bucket, and you're going to have the same problems. And a pool that seems to get irrigated from a different field that was well irrigated, from parched land, but it was getting its own irrigation. It seems that this liquid was coming from one field that was being irrigated, and it was a runoff from the parched field that was being irrigated. It's running off into a pond, and you have water now from that pond that can now irrigate the next field. You understand? You got a field, pond, field.
Right.
And the field, it's been irrigating, and it's just got so much water, it's just going right into the pond. And now the pond has liquid that you can now easily irrigate into the next field. By dying hino tepets, it's still dripping from the first field into the pond. So now mutar lahashkos mimeno beis ha-shocheres, you can now irrigate another parched field through this pond, because you got a good source of water that doesn't seem to be stopping. And that's what he ends off. Hushalo pasak ha-mayin ha-mashka beis ha-shlochem yonim. As long as there must have been some kind of spring that was irrigating the higher field. So as long as that spring is continuously irrigating the higher field, and the higher field has the ability to run off into the pond, which now you can use to easily irrigate the lower field, then you can continue to do that.
But if it does, it couldn't.
Base. Aruga, a row of crops that half of it is low and half of it is high. And for that matter, it could be even two rows. One is high and one is low and one is next to it. Right? Lo yidla mimakam namuch lahashkus makam go. You can't draw a pitcher to irrigate from the lower part that probably has more water that's collected there to irrigate the higher one. Mipnei shutar kol, because that's a big labor-intensive activity. Umutar lidlos mayim, but you can draw buckets of water lahashkos hayurakos. To irrigate the vegetables, to eat them on cholamoid. In other words, you got vegetables and you haven't yet plucked them off.
They're in the high ground.
You're gonna pluck them any day.
And they're in the high ground.
And you're gonna eat them on cholamoid. Or let's say you're gonna sell it for other Jews to eat on cholamoid.
Right.
So you can irrigate that because that's mamish, you need it for cholamoid. It's not just a question of keeping the field good and, you know, you're gonna be taking these vegetables tomorrow on cholamoid, but you gotta keep them, they don't dry out, they don't get damaged. But if you're only irrigating to make them look nice, you know, then, they won't be damaged, but they could look a little nicer. And that's what you're irrigating them, then also that's not allowed. Because that already, that's a lot of work involved, and just to make it look nice, that's not really a tzorech moed. You can really enjoy this even if it doesn't look so nice. Let's do one
here, more. Here in the brackets it seems to say if, however, one does not desire to use them until after chol hamoed, irrigating them is forbidden.
Well, that is true, but I didn't have the brackets there, but that's true. Where's it in the bracket?
At the end of two.
If one does not desire to use them, but he's only to improving the quality, that's the idea. It's the same thing. He only wants to improve the quality, but he ain't going to eat them.
Right.
That's what you can't irrigate it. If you're not planning on eating those crops on Chol HaMoed, all you want them to do is look nice.
Yeah, listen to the Ritva. Right. It's Achila B'moyed specifically, but I'm sure it's why he's specific. If you look at Ches, he says specifically the Ritva says.
That's the one before. That's when you're allowed.
Right. But I'm confused. I mean, if you want to eat them after Chol HaMoed, and you're watering them so that they'll
just look pretty.
No, not. But how about if you're watering them so that they'll be available to
you? Then it depends if it's how big of a loss it's going to be.
Okay.
And then if even it's a big loss, you can't use buckets.
Right. Okay.
So that won't help. So this is basically saying, if you need to eat them now, because then you're allowed to do excessive work to eat now, but just to make it look pretty, then you can't do that. We don't make pits at the roots of grapevines so you can fill them up with water. I guess that's what they did. They got the root of the grapevine and you dig a pit around it so it gets
a trench
and you can put water in it and seeps in and sits there for a long time. You can't do that on Chol HaMoed. What if they were made before Chol HaMoed? But in Niskagu they got a bit damaged. And not totally damaged. Then I raise them a knock, and they can repair them, but you can't make them deeper than they were from before Yom Tov HaMoed. V'chein Amasamayim, and also an Amasamayim. Amasamayim, again, is a little tributary. It's interesting why it's called an Amasamayim. Very nice. He explains why. Because they were usually deep, one Amah.
Ah.
Six Tvachim. That's what they call an amas hamayim, literally an ama of water. In other words, these little what do you call them? Tributaries, little streams, whatever. So tefach is azoy, right? Six tefachim. So one, two, three, four, five. About this high, right? That would be called an amas hamayim. All right. So what are we saying here? So an amas hamayim shenistakalkala. If it was broken, misaknus avoid. You can repair it. That's not such a big deal. But ketzad. So how much do you do it? So let's say, let's say it was a tefach deep, was left over. In other words, it started six tefachim, that was an amma. But it got wrecked up the point, there's only one amma left. So chover bar shish, you could dig until you reach the six tefach limit, then you could dig five tefachim. That's, as long as there's something there, and just finishing it off. The next halach is a little interesting. What if it was two tefachim deep after it got damaged? But before it got damaged, for some reason you made your amas hamayim seven tefachim. It wasn't a six tefach one, it was a seven tefach one. But now you only have two tefachim left. So still interesting, mamika ad shiva, you can dig it down until seven, and not six. It doesn't explain why.
It was seven to start.
I understand, but you only need six. Must be, it must have been a certain trench where you needed to have it be seven.
So if you don't get seven originally, you wanted it to be seven.
I guess maybe you feel that needed more liquid in that area, so I guess an amas hamayim can be liberal in six or seven. But anyway, but you can go to what needs to be done. Umoshkin es hamayim, another halacha, you can draw, cause water to be drawn, may ilan le'ilan, from one tree to another. Let's say you have an orchard, and they need to be, irrigated, so you can make, can draw water to move, you know, from one tree to another tree, since they need to have a lot of liquid. But you can't do it with all, the whole field, because that would already be way too much work. And they also add that the trees won't be damaged if they don't have enough liquid. If it was a very moist field, meaning to say, and it doesn't really need very much water at all, the mutalashkas is cool. Then you can irrigate the whole field because you're not going to need a lot of liquid. Also, marbitzin, I guess a farmer would appreciate these halachas more than we are. Umarbitzin es asodah b'moed, you can sprinkle, that's not heavy duty water at all, sprinkle water on the field, on cholomoed, shekol advar me'elu, because all these things we've mentioned above, ein b'mtorchios, it's not very labor intensive and therefore it is permitted. Good place to stop.
And then you could water your lawn.
We don't water the lawn because we don't need to water the lawn. Yeah. Remember, only if you need it. Your lawn can last 7 days,
sure.
Especially in April and October.
Mine lasts all year.
Because it rains.
Yeah,
I don't water it.
April showers.
Okay, so here's the deal with the traveling Hasidim.
Yes.